Welcome to another episode of DNA Through the Senses. This is your host, Anna and
Joe.
And I know it's been a while, and today we're going to talk about the oops, we did it again. We seem to get ourselves into different types of troubles all the time, but let's start with the area. On this trip, we ended up in Mesa Verde, a place which we had visited before, and we really wanted to show Nikki what it looked like.
So, as we've talked about, we tried to centralize our location. We left from Sharma in the morning, and we took about a 200-mile drive to Mesa Verde. When we got there, it was unfortunately raining, and the visitor's office was already closed. And we did think we could still go for a hike. So we went to see the cave dwellings. So we really enjoyed the walking tour last time we were there. And we decided to take the walking path down by the cave dwellings and through a canyon. And we just had a great time. So for those of you that have never been to Mesa Verde, it's basically a very large mesa. And the indigenous people that lived there basically was a fortress. And up towards the top of the mesa, there's access to a canyon. And the Native Americans carved their dwellings into the side of the mountain. And they had ovens, you know, that they cut into the stone, and their homes and rooms. And they've really preserved the area quite well. And they do limit the access to them. And if you go on a guided tour, you have more access. If you're self-guided, then you have more of a limited access to the area.
So last time that we were there, we were able to get into some of the dwellings, actually, that were carved into the bottom of the mountain. And you can see that they did it stone by stone. First, the people assume that the Pueblans went and dug out the side of the mountain and then slowly built with small pieces of adobe their dwellings in there, and actually dug into the bottom portion of that carving to create more room underneath it. So, and the only way to get down there is actually by taking a ladder down there and looking at their actual homes, what it looked like beneath. And what they used the top of the mesa for was to actually do their farming, because they were farmers and hunters. And they did their farming up on top of the mesa. And the dwelling to actually get there, it's, since I, you know, like I said, it's from the bottom to the top, it's around probably 20 to 30 miles. So if somebody was going to attack, it was actually going to take them quite a bit of time to get there, giving them enough time to actually react to the invasion.
Yeah, and as you drive around the area or on top of the mesa, the views, you have just a very, very good views of the surrounding area. And you could see how if anybody was coming your way, you'd be able to see them well in advance. So, and then the only way up is basically up steep rock cliffs is to get up to them. It's amazing that they had grain silos in their cave dwellings. They had places to grind their corn. It was just really neat. A lot of history there.
Another thing that hasn't recuperated is they had a fire back in 2000, and you can still see some of the remnants of that fire, and you see how it has started to grow. But then again, whenever there's very dry or drought-like conditions in the area with the lightning and how fast that comes in, it causes a lot more fires to happen. So you still see a lot of that up in the mesa right before you get into the dwellings. And as you're going down, you can see the flat mesa and you see the burnt trees. And then you also see the fresh green sprigs that are coming out. So it's nice to see the topography changing and how well it's recuperating itself from those tragedies slowly.
We did notice that the trail closed 6:30, and we kind of got distracted on our hike, and we got back probably closer to 6:45, only to realize that when they meant close, they were going to lock the gate. And there was no way really around the gate except for going up and over the gate. And we then experienced what Anna calls, oops, we did it again.
So all the signs that we saw say the gates close at 6:30. Nowhere on any of the signs did it say they were going to lock the gates. So we actually decided to take the trail around, I think it was 5:45 p.m. And because they had the visitor center closed when we got there, which was 3 o'clock, we were unaware that the actual fast road to go to the cliff dwellings was closed because they were repairing it. And then they had another route to go around to get to the dwellings, which we had not taken before. And we thought it was going to be a quick and easy route. And we actually went the wrong way. And then on the way back is when we actually heard chains and we're like, they're locking it? Why are they locking it? You know, why are they putting chains on it? And it was loud enough and we were loud enough to where they could have heard us if they would have gone down and checked. But nobody checked. And we were so used to actual rangers coming down from the trails, going up to make sure that there was nobody else on the trail. And this isn't in other locations, not Mesa Verde. But they didn't do this in this location. So there I am trying to rush the kids and trying to rush Joe to get out of there because I'm like, they're closing and nobody's checking. And by the time we got there, like Joe said, it was completely locked. There was a lock in there. There was no way for us to go around it because the gate goes all the way down towards the cliff and, you know, can't really go over a cliff unless you want to fall down and end up killing yourself. So, you know, it's nice to be young. I was 39 at the time. I hadn't jumped that high for quite a while. Last time I jumped that high was in the military training exercises. So since I already had experience with that, I decided to go first to make sure that Joe could get the kids over and I can help guide them on the other side. And man, as I prayed, as I sat on top of that gate and I saw the distance down, I prayed that I would not break my knees.
And remember, Anna's only 5 feet tall, so it was a big jump for her. So I put on my MacGyver hat, and once Anna got over and said, oh, you know what, I can use my belt as a step for the kids. So I pulled off my belt, and we sent Alice over. Alice went over first, right?
Yeah, after I went.
And Anna had her camera with her. And she gave the camera to Alice. And then Nikki went over.
So let's rewind a little bit. Why did we go over and not wait or use your phone? Well, the phones were not working. And we didn't see any actual phone where we could call someone to come and unlock the gate and come get us. And Nikki was actually starting to freak out a little bit. He was starting to cry, getting scared, shaking a little bit. He was concerned of our situation. So there were several options we could take. One of us could go over and go get some help. Or we could all just go over and get it over with. Or we could just wait. However, we did not want to wait because there was a thunderstorm that was coming our way as well, which would make it more dangerous being in there with no actual, what would you call it?
Umbrellas.
No umbrellas or any cover. And then you're kind of in this crevice. So you don't know where lightning is going to strike. So it was a bit dangerous. So it was either wait or move.
The other thing is we were kind of on a pretty steep incline. And the... So once it started, if it got wet, it would be pretty slippery. So it was a little concerning. But we got Nikki over, and then I decided to go over. And by the way, unbeknownst to myself or Anna, our fledgling photographer, Alice, was taking pictures. And so I get up and over the fence. Well, I get on top of the fence. The fence is about 5 feet tall, wouldn't you say, Anna?
It was about six to 7 feet tall, because it was taller than me.
So I get up to the top and then lean over the side. And now remember, I don't have my belt. And we've been hiking lots, so my pants are a little loose. And so as I'm going over the top, my backside might have come out a little bit. And yes, there was photographic records of it. But fortunately, we made it over the fence, and it was a good experience for the kids of perseverance and coming up with options of how to get over the fence and back up to our car. But it was a beautiful hike, and one of the reasons why we were a little late coming back is that in addition to taking a wrong turn, we just saw some spectacular views, and we probably lost track of time that way.
Yeah, and Joe decided to go have a small conversation with the rangers, and lo and behold, he found out that the person who had actually locked the gate was actually wearing a hearing device, which, you know, brought us to the assumption that, he must have been the one who locked the gate and couldn't hear us because his device might have been off. So that's important to know.
Yeah, when we were, prior to getting to the gate, you know, where we are, the four of us, two kids, very noisy, you know, and we're in kind of a canyon, so it echoes. So we thought, yeah, obviously people know that we're down here. But that wasn't the case. But we made some suggestions as to, you know, things they might be able to do to help out. And, you know, so nobody gets stuck down there. But they didn't have enough rangers to really keep track of it, you know, all the people that are coming through there. And it kind of surprised me because we were kind of in peak season, peak tour season when we were there. But it was very enjoyable. When we got up back up to the top area where we were, where there was kind of a secondary visitor center, we ran into some other people that were starting the hike, and we warned them that, hey, the gate's locked. You can't get through. But we did see some spectacular views up on top of the cave dwellings, and I think Nikki really appreciated it, and Alice got to live some past memories from when she was there. Last time Nikki was there, was he was still in his mommy's tummy.
Yeah, other things that we were able to discover is the first time that we actually went over there, it was back in 2014, and the only place we visited were the cave dwellings, and we got to go in them and explore them and listen to a little bit of the history. With that area being closed, you know, the direct road or hiking trail to get over there, we had to go around, and we discovered two other very awesome hiking areas, and one of them actually had petroglyphs that you could actually see on the side of the mountain there. And also, there were some areas where it was very steep on one side and very narrow on the trail. So we actually had to keep the kids very close to us. And Nikki and Alice really did very well. By this time, we had been hiking for quite a while, in, you know, since we took off. And every single time, they're doing so much better at listening and making sure that they stay safe in the trail, and also having to pass through this very narrow trail that is, you're surrounded by a huge boulder on top of you and another boulder that's sitting, that's on the side holding that big boulder up, and the wall of the trail was really nice for them and really cool. And we had to go in sideways because, you know, we're a little top heavy, just a tad. So it was a lot of fun, but I didn't think we were going to make it to the cave dwellings before they closed, and that's when we decided it was time to turn around.
Yeah, the kids have improved immensely. Alice seems to really enjoy hiking. But Nikki, usually when we start off hiking, he's disgruntled a little bit. And then by the time he starts into the hike, about 15 minutes, he starts to enjoy it and comments how beautiful things are. And the canyon that we kind of walk through, it opened up into more of a valley that we could see down below. But unfortunately, we didn't get to take the trail that far.
So this trail, you guys have to be very careful. Like I said, it's very narrow and steep. It's going to take a while for you to get to the very bottom of the trail and then coming back up. So you have to have quite a bit of experience. With the rain that we were having that day, it was very slippery as well. So we had to take it nice and slow, especially with both kids. And, you know, you had a drop-off right next to you. But it is definitely worth it. Not wheelchair accessible, not crutches accessible. So I don't recommend it if you are in those conditions. However, if you do want to visit, I would recommend that you actually call and find out if the main trail to the dwellings are open. And that's a pretty safe trail for wheelchairs or, you know, crutches if you have access in that manner. And that's a good trail to take and explore it. Otherwise, the other two trails are not able to do that. And I think that's very important.
I guess the other thing to mention is that we started off in Chama, New Mexico. We kind of set out a limit of about 150-mile radius from the locations that we'd stop and park the motorhome and spend the night. And this was just on the outskirts of that. And it really shortened the amount of time that we had to experience at Mesa Verde. But we did end up getting to see some Native American jewelry and some Native Americans at the entrance to the park, which I was really happy to see. But remember to bring cash, because they only accept cash. That also caused a little bit of a delay for us. We had to drive to the nearest ATM to go get some cash. Just a wonderful drive and a beautiful area to see.
So here's the thing about Native Americans and their artwork. It's always better to buy directly from them, because then you know exactly where that money is going to, and the money that they make goes directly to them. So when you travel in the mountains, especially in Colorado, the weather changes very rapidly, and no one is better apt to tell you about how rapidly than Joe.
Mainly because I grew up there. Yeah, we went from beautiful sunny skies to a downpour, and it was just a deluge. Back to beautiful skies again, and when we were hiking, it was actually very nice. We had a little bit of a little rain, but not bad. But on the way back home,
huge downpour. You couldn't stay dry, even with an umbrella. And we had umbrellas at this point.
Yeah, when we first pulled into the visitor center, it was just a complete deluge. We'd actually stopped off there to see if we could get maps. And we waited for a few minutes and then got out our umbrellas and walked to the visitor center from the parking lot, and it was just a complete downpour. Our umbrellas were pretty much useless. But then, as Anna said, once we got up to the trail, which was it was about 20 miles, I believe, 25 miles from the visitor center. And then there are other visitor centers located up the park. They're smaller, but where the trailhead was that we started off with, there was a small visitor center there too, but it was also closed.
And in that visitor center, they have a shop, a small restaurant, and of course, there's bathrooms there. So definitely stop there. It's actually quite a bit of it's pretty big for the location. They actually also have places for you to rent. There's like a small little motel, RV spaces also. So if you have a smaller RV, not a 45, you can't take 45 up there. you can actually stay there. And they have little cabins. So those are also options if you actually want to go and stay for the weekend.
So we have been getting into the habit of bringing snack lunches with us and everything. And you have to remember, COVID was still strong and everything's not completely opened up yet. So we went up to the top visitor center, which was up further from the trail that we took, and the restaurant there was closed, and we went and got out our picnic lunch and sat in the rain and had a snack. But
learn from more mistakes, stay in good shape, and if it says 6:30, verify whether they're locking that gate.
And that's one thing that I did forget, is that, always prepare for a longer hike, even though you may not initially think you're going to go on that long hike.
Safe travels.